This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. John Hoadley is in his second term representing the city of Kalamazoo and most of Kalamazoo Township in the State House. In November, voters will decide if the Democrat will get a third term representing the 60th State House District. John Hoadley, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So what would you like to do if you do get another 2 years in the State House?
If voters send me back to the State House and I have the honor and privilege to serve, there's a lot of work that we haven't finished yet that I'd like to get done. You know, for me, I've always talked about a Michigan that invests in people. And I think people are at the point where we want to make sure that we're spending our tax dollars on things that actually benefit people. So let's fix the roads. Let's invest in our schools to actually create smaller class sizes so teachers have the freedom to teach. And instead of spending more money on corporate giveaways or tax cuts to the companies that just have the best lobbyists. So these are things that I would like to get done. A large part of that will depend on what party's in the majority. And so, you know, I'm feeling excited that a lot of voters across the state are hungry for some change and that they're supporting Democratic candidates across the state of Michigan.
So let's start with that fix the roads idea, because there has been some movement there, but there are still people who feel pretty frustrated with what they drive over every day. So what would you want to do to maybe have a more immediate fix to the roads?
Well, we absolutely need to actually fix the roads. A bunch of us a few years ago called out our Republican colleagues for saying that you're putting a Band-Aid on a literal pothole. So when they passed a set of funding measures that was inadequate to fix the job 5-6 years ago, and then said the money won't come for 5 or 6 years in the future, we knew that that was a problem. And the roads have only gotten worse. I appreciate Gretchen Whitmer and her idea for an infrastructure bank, so we actually can create a pool of capital that can then supercharge and immediately fund some projects. I also believe in responsible budgeting. So we have to have an honest conversation. You know, 3-4 years ago, when I introduced an amendment to say that we should charge heavy trucks more, I stand by that. And we need to put more revenue back in the system. We need to take a look at all the ways that we're funding our roads to make sure that we are fairly distributing that and not putting all the burden on individual drivers like we really did with the Republican plan from a couple years ago. At the end of the day, there's a bunch of work that needs to be done, but we need to make sure then we're prioritizing it in our budget, and that has not happened over the last 4 years.
Okay, you mentioned more for heavy trucks. Would that be vehicle registration?
Yeah, I proposed an amendment that would have done more for both the vehicle registration and then a surcharge specifically for trucks. Yeah, over a certain weight class. I need to pull up the amendment that I had from a couple of years ago. Right, my colleagues have not wanted to take it up recently, but we've literally put forward public policy solutions in the past. So let's actually get them done if Democrats are in control.
Is that the only place you would go for more revenue right now? I mean, would you be interested in, you know, higher gas tax, anything like that?
You know, I'm someone who thinks that we should actually pay for the things that we want and need. And, you know, I'm someone who also says, if you tell me that if we change our tax structure slightly, so perhaps we're paying more in one side, but we're saving money in another, I'm open to that conversation. But a lot of us have been tired of this sort of bait and switch where we keep having our taxes and fees raised so we can give away tax dollars to the biggest corporations. And that's not right. And so, it would depend on what sort of political options are available as well. If we have a legislature that is more focused on partisan bickering next year than actually producing solutions, that's not good either. So, you know, I think people need to be involved in this conversation, but I can tell you we need to stop giving away the very limited money that we have to the biggest corporations who don't need it.
Give us an example there of where money is going to corporate interests rather than, you know, being able to fix roads or do other things.
Yeah, we do this all the time. So Republicans in the legislature put forward a set of bills that the good jobs packages, so-called, from Governor Snyder, that was pushed by him, that literally let some of the largest projects get the sweetest tax deals through credits so they don't have to pay taxes, but we still do as individuals. And, that's just one example. In the state legislature, routinely, there are bills that are put in front of us that say we should exempt you know, jet fuel. We should exempt airplane repairs. We should exempt, you know, the list goes on and on and on. And it's always under the guise of, well, this is just a few million. This is just a few million more. But tell that to the teachers then who have a few million less spread across the state to actually pay for the supplies in their classrooms, or being told, well, let's just put one more child in your classroom to make up for our budget shortfall. And with that money, a portion of that goes to the general fund as well. So those are dollars that could have been put towards roads and bridges or pipes and clean water, but they're not. So, you know, someone can, I guess, get a cheaper airplane fix. That's not what I support.
You mentioned you wanted smaller classrooms in schools. We are speaking on Friday, a day after the State House passed, or a committee, I guess, in the State House passed legislation that said they're going to keep the evaluation standards for school administrators where they're at, so they're not factoring in test scores any more than they have previously. Let me broaden out the question a little bit, though. How should we be evaluating teachers? How should we be evaluating individual schools, school districts? There's a lot of belief that, test scores are a far from perfect way to do that. When you're sitting there in Lansing, what sort of things do you look at to say, you know, that's a school that's doing it right, and those are the best practices that might work elsewhere?
I think we need to start by trusting teachers. I trust teachers. I trust parents. And I'm going to ask our students to really lean in and try to, you know, learn. This is a recipe that's worked throughout American history. Recently, though, we've gone to the point where we think that we can measure the success of every student teacher by how well they do on a test. So there's an entire industrial complex that's built around this idea of more testing, more immediate feedback, and that every student's interaction with a teacher can be reduced to some sort of data point. And you know, at the same time, I hear people telling me that they want more testing for accountability for a teacher. And at the same time, we also should have more time in the classroom to take on life teaching skills and give enriching educational opportunities. You know, at some point, we have to say, why don't we make sure that we are investing and raising up teachers, and that we're giving them the professional supports they need, that they need, and the freedom to teach in their classrooms, and be able to then work individually with those students without the fear of being overcrowded and you know, over micromanaged, so they can actually then meet the individual needs of those students. That's sort of the bigger piece conversation that we have to get to. But over the last, you know, since 2010 at least, we keep putting nominally a few more dollars into the school aid fund, and it's not keeping up with the rate of the of inflation. And beyond that, we also know that we're not adequately funding the needs of the of our schools based on numerous reports that have come out. So even though we're spending a lot of money in the state of Michigan, it's insufficient to produce the results we want. How do you test that? I mean, part of it, I think, is we should be able, when anyone graduates a Michigan school, they should be able to read well, they should be able to think clearly, they should be able to do basic math, and have a general understanding of how the world works. I mean, these are some of the basic things. So they're ready to enter the workforce or college or skill trades, whatever happens to be next. But that's that is going back to something that I think a lot of us have to do, which is trusting our schools and our teachers to teach and our parents to be involved in each step of that process.
Well, but is there a role for the state there in setting some sort of standards? I mean, you did mention that you want to back off and you want to give teachers some freedom, but, you know, at the same time, the state also has an interest in making sure that those students come out of high school ready to go to college or ready to go into skilled trades and get additional training, ready to, you know, get into the workforce if that's the case.
Sure. And I'm not opposed to testing in general, but the idea is that, you know, with test after test, we see that we're not producing the results. And so we think about that we need on any of those measures to be successful. So then the conversation in Lansing becomes, how do we do another test? How do we make that test higher stakes? As opposed to this fact that we have a drought of teachers who are even thinking of becoming teachers right now, because the teaching profession has been under attack for decades. You know, even my own sister, right? I come from a family of teachers. And even my own sister who lives out of state, but she's feeling it too. And, you know, for her this year was a decision to move in a different direction. And so she left teaching. And that type of story, you know, is just in my own family, but I've heard it from families across the district and across the state. And when other folks are telling their children, people who are teachers right now, and saying, you know, are you sure you want to think about teaching? Perhaps there's something else. it really speaks to the fact that that we've been undervaluing the profession. And we put a lot on teachers. The conversations that are happening in Lansing right now and in D.C. are everything from teachers should be asked to teach at a globally competitive standard, which they should, and that they're supposed to be taking on life skill instruction. And now we're even hearing some people say that they should also learn to shoot, to have more guns in the classrooms. I mean, that's a lot for any one profession. And now we're asking teachers to do all of it, while at the same time, the biggest piece of education reform, quote unquote, coming out of Lansing this year was finding a way to weaken the teachers' retirement systems. I mean, that's not right. And that's why I think people are saying, you know, enough's enough. We want to do something different. So I'm really excited that I think that people are hungry to have a conversation about our schools, our teachers, how we fund our schools, because at the end of the day, our children deserve better.
PFASs. They've been found in Pargement. They've been found Richland Township, a lot of areas around Southwest Michigan. You know, what's the role for the state here, specifically a state lawmaker, in perhaps examining what the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality is doing and trying to ensure that if these chemicals are in the drinking water, that something is done quickly about that?
Everybody deserves to have clean drinking water. And, you know, the fact that our water is under attack right now from negligence, from Flint to Parchment to counties in between, really shows that that the Republican leadership has been failing in their ability to protect one of the most important pieces of the public good, and that's our clean water. You know, I sit on the Department of Environmental Quality Subcommittee of Appropriations, and you know, that department has been underfunded and under-resourced to actually do the job. And, you know, I was so disappointed earlier this year when my Republican colleagues passed a set of bills that would then even take away some of the ability for the DEQ to deny permits and let polluters and the companies that will benefit from polluting our waters or our air decide if they would like to overturn a denial that's made by the DEQ. So even in a time when we have water crisis, Republicans in the state legislature decided to cede even more control to the people who are polluting our waters. And that is so wrong. You know, we know that there is potentially thousands of sites that have PFAS. And I do want to say I applaud Governor Snyder for now instituting testing in more locations. That's key, right? Because we should be looking towards solutions. But the rubber is going to meet the road at the point where we need to have making sure that we are paying for the PFAS cleanup. And that's going to be asking folks that are known polluters or folks that have some connection to the liability chain at all levels that they've made profits, whether they were making the PFAS chemicals or they were using the PFAS chemicals on their materials when they were selling to the public. They were making a profit. And now their profits has resulted in severe environmental and health damage to the people in Michigan. So they need to pay for that cleanup. And we need to get beyond just having a response, which, by the way, I will say in Kalamazoo County, it was so good to see everybody, regardless of their political party or their level of government, come together and say, we now know there's a problem in Parchment, let's solve it. That was incredible. But we need, as lawmakers, to go beyond that and say, what is the system change that needs to happen? So we need to hold those polluters accountable. We need to be tougher in the standards of our drinking water. I've co-sponsored legislation to actually lower the drinking water standards. And then ultimately, we're going to need to hold polluters.
Lower the drinking water standards. You mean lower the amounts of...
Thank you. Yeah, okay. The amount of PFAS that is acceptable in drinking water. Yes. and then ultimately, we need to hold polluters accountable and make them pay.
What happens, though, and, you know, as we're trying to examine where perhaps the Parchment contamination came from, there's a lot of questions here. What if the company's bankrupt and perhaps has been, you know, is no longer in existence?
You know, I'm someone who says that someone still has those profits somewhere, right? And, you know, I think there is a responsibility for particularly corporate leaders that if they're going to be at the helm of an organization, that they need to be you know, they get praised when it goes well, and they need to, you know, be honest and accountable when things don't go well. It would be perhaps if we can make sure that our CEOs and C-suite executives are held to a higher standard, that they would then make sure that the company is operating at a higher standard too. Now, here's the thing. Science changes over time, right? But it is sort of curious that in the United States, a pharmaceutical company has to do a significant amount of testing to prove that their drug is safe before it goes to market. And we know even that has some flaws. Yet for companies that produce chemicals, they essentially get to sell their chemicals until they're proven unsafe. We're the ones, the consumers, the taxpayers, that are picking up that tab. And frankly, perhaps we should look at reversing that before we put new chemicals onto the market.
Well, there is something called the precautionary principle, and there are people who advocate that's the way we can operate. Can we say in the state of Michigan that we're going to operate by the precautionary principle and yet somehow make sure that if the other 49 states aren't, that we're somehow protected?
Well, I want to make sure that we're putting our people in Michigan first. And so for me, it's making sure that, yeah, I would love to set some tougher standards for the people of Michigan because because we deserve it. We deserve to have the cleanest air and we deserve to have the cleanest water. I mean, we're the protectors of the Great Lakes. And so, the reality is when, 20%, 21% of the world's fresh waters are essentially on our shorelines, that we have to be extra careful that we are not inadvertently dumping chemicals or other contaminants into our water system that could literally poison one of the most precious resources on Earth.
What would you do about auto insurance rates?
I'm on record as supporting the fair and affordable changes to our auto insurance. There's a whole lot of things that we could do, right? Michigan's auto insurance is too high. So, let's start by ending the practice of redlining and discriminatory zip code problems. Let's make sure that we are putting a reasonable fee schedule in on hospitals and other folks so no one is getting, exorbitantly billed because they happen to come in and use a hospital from an auto accident versus, say, an accident in their home. Let's also make sure that we demand accountability. So if we're going to have a fraud authority, let's make sure we're cracking down on any sort of user fraud, but also insurance companies that just routinely deny your benefits the first time around just because, and then hoping that you will give up as a consumer. I think there's a whole bunch of pieces that can be done. Actually, and one of my colleagues, Abdullah Hamoud, had a really smart plan where we could change sort of the various thresholds where, we could lower the outstanding liability while actually reducing costs for individuals. But to make this work, it means that we need to have folks willing to come to the table from both the insurance side and the hospital side. And right now, the conversation in Lansing has been very one-sided. We all need auto insurance for our cars. That is absolutely true. And we also need to make sure, though, that when you're buying insurance, you're going to get a product that makes sense. We'd hate for someone to think that they're covered when they go into their hospital, the ER, leave, and then come back, and all of a sudden they find out they're not, which was potentially one of the flaws with what was being proposed last year. But, when the legislature is working well, we should be able to come together and really hammer out some of the solutions that we all agree on. I'm hoping that after the election, we can get some of that done.
Can we continue to have lifetime benefits in Michigan for people injured in catastrophic auto accidents?
So the MCCA, which is the fund that actually has the catastrophic coverage, is actuarially sound to our best of our knowledge. They also, I will note though, shield themselves from a lot of transparency in that fund. So we can make sure that we know why any rates are being adjusted over time. But what people don't realize is that, or a lot of folks don't realize, is that there's two parts of your bill. One is the catastrophic coverage, and then one is whatever else your auto insurance wants to cover. And, we all pay the hundred-some dollar charge every year for the catastrophic coverage. And that's sound to the best of our knowledge right now. But the question then, why is the rest of your bill, which can be range from $1,000 in some instances to multiple thousands of dollars, what's driving that cost? And, for a lot of us, we see that there are your zip code and other non-driving factors play a bigger part than it should. So let's take that off the table. Let's put that fee schedule in place so people's bills, the first portion of their bill, isn't getting exorbitantly charged. And I think you'd see a lot of people's insurance start to go down.
Homelessness became quite an issue in Kalamazoo in this fall. And there was a lot of talk around the city commission table that, hey, there's only so much we can do as a city. As you look at that, as a state representative, what more could the state of Michigan be doing to address homelessness?
Oh, there's a ton more what we could be doing to address homelessness. You know, at the state level, we are subject to some pass-through dollars to the federal government, but it would be nice to see the federal government prioritize ending homelessness. It'd be nice to see then that the state have more access to things like housing vouchers. In Kalamazoo County, there are 2,000 people waiting to get a housing voucher, which means that there are folks who could be in more affordable housing and have a place, but for the fact that they can't quite make it because they don't have a voucher. We need to build more housing. You know, in Kalamazoo and in counties across the state, we see that the price of homes have been going up, which and the price of renting is going up. So for folks that are trying to get a foothold into that those markets, there's just not as much inventory available and even less at an affordable price. But the other thing we can do is make sure that we are raising wages for working people. So home ownership, apartment rentals, and other housing opportunities become more affordable because you have a paycheck that can actually support it. And a lot of folks are in situations where they don't quite have a home because they are couch surfing or they're doubled up in Kalamazoo County because, you know, between rent and the auto insurance and food and making sure that there are clothes on their children's backs, it is just not enough on a minimum wage job.
What should the minimum wage be?
I've supported a $15 an hour minimum wage. I recently voted for the $12 an hour minimum wage. That was in front of the legislature because that was in front of us at that time. You know, ultimately, you know, we need to make sure that we're raising wages for working people so they are benefiting from the economic activity of this country.
The ballot proposals. Proposal one would legalize marijuana for recreational purposes. Should voters support that?
Yes.
Why?
Voters should support legalizing marijuana and regulating it appropriately for a couple of reasons. First, the war on drugs, particularly marijuana, has been a failure. It's ultimately resulted in locking up a disproportionate of black and brown young men. And, you know, the question of who gets caught, you know, really determines who runs up in prison. And also, you know, there's a freedom argument here that, you know, at the end of the day, the impacts of marijuana from a health perspective are negligible. People can debate that one way or the other. But if it's hard, it's very hypocritical and hard for us to say that we're going to let reasonable adults make reasonable choices with regulation on their consumption of alcohol or cigarettes, knowing the health risks, and at the same time not say we're going to do that for marijuana.
Proposal two, to change the method of redistricting in Michigan.
I'm a strong yes on that. I introduced legislation that was a reintroduction of Sean McCann's legislation that would have tackled nonpartisan redistricting. The system right now is rigged and broken, and we absolutely need to put it in the hands of a nonpartisan, citizens-based redistricting commission.
Proposal three on voting access.
A strong yes on that as well. I've also introduced, with the help previously of former Representative Gretchen Driscoll, a voter bill of rights that would essentially help modernize many of our voting procedures in the state of Michigan to make it more accessible and secure, and Proposal 3 would do that.
So you mentioned early on that you're hoping for a change in leadership, in other words, a Democratic takeover of the House, maybe the Senate, Democratic governor. Let's just focus on the House. How much would it mean in terms of what you think you would be able to accomplish in 2 years if there's a Democratic speaker, for instance?
If there's a Democratic speaker, the bill to amend the Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act to prohibit discrimination against LGBT folks in the state of Michigan would have a hearing and would have a vote. If we had a Democratic speaker, we would see a budget coming out of the state of Michigan that's prioritizing working people that could perhaps do something on homelessness or protecting the environment, as opposed to one that that favors more tax cuts for the wealthiest corporations. A lot of folks don't realize that the majority party is the majority of every committee, and the committee chairperson has the nearly absolute discretion in deciding what gets a hearing or what doesn't. You know, for someone like me, who's been advocating for safe patient staffing ratios, meaning that a nurse could be is not overly assigned too many individuals, but a reasonable amount that they can take care of. You know, it'd have a chance to actually move that piece of legislation. You know, there's so many things that could get done, but for the fact that the majority party right now, the Republicans in the state of Michigan, have made a policy decision not to have a hearing on the bills or move those items up for a vote. And, you know, I think people are ready to see some change in the state of Michigan. It's been entirely controlled by Republicans for the last 8 years. And, you know, perhaps it's time that we let a different policy agenda advance and see how we can make sure that we're helping to lift the boats and of the rest of people in Michigan.
And of course, what Republicans will say is, yes, you're right. We've been in control the last 8 years. But before we got there, in complete control, the state was in trouble. And there was a single state recession. And then the Great Recession hit Michigan harder than it hit a lot of other places. And hey, things, as we sit here in 2018, are better now than they were in 2010.
The things in 2018 are better for some people than they were in 2010. And objectively, of course, they are better for the state of Michigan because we're no longer in a national recession. And, you know, so I would say part of that is absolutely things are different, but things aren't necessarily better. Right. Just yesterday or just earlier this week, we saw a report coming out showing that our children in who are in special education and have IEPs are performing some of the worst in the country. It's not necessarily better for them. That we know that for a lot of folks who are seeing unemployment numbers drop, but wages not necessarily increase in the state of Michigan, I'm not sure it's better for them. Right. So there's a lot of pieces that says, listen, I'm one who gives credit where credit is due. I work with people regardless of all of what side of the aisle that they're from. And there are good things that have happened. Absolutely. But at the same time, the policy agenda that's been pushed forth by the Republicans has not moved some key priorities that a lot of people in Michigan want to see. Whether that's related to wages, protections in the workforce, the way that we treat our environment, the actually producing clean water, not just responding to crises, protecting pre-existing conditions, the expansion of Healthy Michigan, which is now under attack, potentially even more with if Bill Schuette were to be elected governor. I mean, these are things that I think people are saying, yeah, let's give Democrats a shot now to see how the rest of our lives can be improved too.
So you met your opponent here in Kalamazoo, a bridge joked in a headline, hell freezes over, because you took a selfie together and talked about meeting for a beer later. Does this reflect how a civil campaign, where two people with different views on how government should conduct policy can be run? Or is it, as was remarked in a blog post at the Gong Renew Service, perhaps with a little bit of snark, it can happen in a state house district where the Democratic candidate won 70 and then 69% of the vote in 2014 and 2016. By the way, not very good years for Democratic candidates, indicating a very safe Democratic district.
I think anybody can have a civil conversation, right? You know, I think about the fact that I've enjoyed meeting Mr. Baker. We did have the beer that we promised. And, you know, we've done a ton of forums together. And you know, I think he's a great guy. We obviously disagree on policy. But just because you're running in a more competitive seat doesn't mean that our politics need to become divisive. Does not mean that we need to resort to the mudslinging that's coming up in each one of these races. You know, and we're seeing that folks can have be from different sides of the aisle and still get along just fine. But, you know, I would note that we're only going to change it if we start leading by example. So, you know, for folks that are in safer seats, whatever that's considered, you know, I hope that they're being civil. For folks that are in competitive seats, you know, it wouldn't kill you to go have a beer, right? Go meet your opponent, go shake their hand, be able to know who their family is, and say, you know, and get to know them, because at the end of the day, it is about serving everybody. And we're not going to do that if we just keep going to Teams Red and Team Blue.
State Representative John Hoadley is seeking a third term in the Michigan House. The Democrat represents the 60th district. That includes the city of Kalamazoo and most of Kalamazoo Township. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.